Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock.
A camo turnip.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Fighting Cock Podcast. I'm joined on the line by one Aaron Wolf. Aaron, how you doing?
Good, man. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I was a part of Aaron's podcast that you've been producing for a while. It's really, really, really good. It was really a wonderful thing to be a part of. But so that I don't butcher what the podcast is about, can you explain it to the people who listen to this podcast?
Yeah, for sure. It's the podcast is called First Time, Long Time. And I say that it's stories about sports for people who may not like sports. It's basically, I try to find kind of like the heart and soul of what makes sport exciting to viewers or to fans or to even players, and bring it out in sort of narrative storytelling. And this current season, we decided to take a look at the very last games that were played before the coronavirus shutdown happened around the world. We looked at all the major sports. We watched the last games that were played, and we tried to extract some meaning from each one of the games, some sort of lesson that we could learn about what our society is like and what we are like as people based on what happened in those last games in basketball, football. We're going to look at cricket, rugby, and I'm forgetting one. Oh, hockey and baseball. Yeah, I don't know if I said that already. Whatever, but yeah, that's basically what it's about.
Yeah, it's really good. And beyond this season that you're working on currently, the last podcast that you produced were really, really, really interesting. And what I found interesting listening back to the podcast that you produced that's just been released. So you can go and find it. Where can people find it, Aaron?
You can find it on all your podcatcher devices or whatever, but you can also look at firsttimelongtime.am. You'll find links to all the episodes.
So when we did our interview, I was just responding to your questions. I didn't know that there was a wider context to the podcast he was producing. And when I listened back to it, I found myself getting quite emotional, to be honest. We talked about fandom. We talked about the importance of fans being a part of the spectacle, not just a part of it, the mainstream of the spectacle. And I found myself in a weird situation where I was longing to be back in amongst the stands and watching Spurs play. But weirdly, it wasn't longing to get back to the White Hart Lane as we know it now with our new shiny stadium. It was actually to get back to the old stadium. And yeah. I found myself very melancholic about it, really. And it wasn't what I wanted to feel out of it. And I think that's more power to you, Aaron, for creating something that was, genuinely understood from you know, we've got to say it, from a fan who is American, who 15 years ago, when I was entrenched in the terraces of White Hart Lane, I wouldn't expect someone who lives thousands of miles away from where I did, or did at the time, or do right now, to really be able to understand and capture what it's like to be a fan on the terraces and how important that is. And it made me feel a little bit sad and like I say, melancholic, the fact that we don't seem to have that anymore. And that's not even talking about the coronavirus and what that's done to sport. I felt like you captured something that I might never have again, which is really, really sad. What do you make of that?
Yeah, man. I mean, well, first of all, thank you for saying all that. It's very, very, very kind of you to say. I mean, the episode is called An Empty Cathedral. And on one very basic level, it is about all of the stadiums that are empty right now. And it is about the fact that we can't see sport together and be together. But it doesn't come out in the episode, but I can tell you that the other meaning of it, the empty cathedral, like I had not been to the new stadium, but I know that it is not White Hart Lane. I remember thinking back in the days of the last days of White Hart Lane and knowing that that was going to get torn down and a new, shiny, beautiful, immaculate cathedral was going to be built in its place. I knew it was going to also be an empty one. Regardless of how many people were in there, it takes years and years of tears and joy and pain and happiness to kind of actually create the real material of what a stadium is, the real place of that place. And this episode was kind of all about where that stuff comes from, that it comes from this human connection, the people, the faces, the shared collective experience of watching football together. That's what makes the place the place. It was there. I was lucky enough to go to the old White Hart Lane twice, and it was undeniable. And you walk in, and it was, I mean, from my kind of jet-lagged, wild, wide-open eyes, like it was a sort of crazy, intense place that I fell in love with immediately. And it was a few years before it got torn down. And I don't know what to say other than, like, I'm sorry it's melancholy, because it is. And it will be until like a generation after us just only knows the Tottenham Stadium as the stadium, right? Right. It will always be something that is not the place that meant so much to so many people.
What can I ask from someone who's sort of, you know, followed these football club and fell into the football club based on the ideals of his father, and his brothers, his five brothers also. I'm talking about myself in the third person now. I didn't mean to do that. My brothers, my five brothers, my dad. I can't believe I just done that. My five brothers. Do you know what it is? I think because what you produced was so poignant that I felt like I had to elevate this conversation, and that's stupid because the Fighting Cock is the lowest bar of quality football content. Anyway, fuck that. Right, so I found myself with my brothers and my dad supporting a football club that was thrown at me. It weren't like I had ever had the opportunity to choose a football club, and nor should you, in my opinion. You shouldn't be able to choose who you support. Your football club, in one way or another, chooses you. And I'm just interested, because this is the first time I've really sat down with a fan from across the Atlantic Ocean I don't understand how you can feel as passionate about a club that you have just seen on the telly. Like, how have you come to the point where you feel so strongly about the football club? And make no doubt, you do feel it. It's clear, and all of the fans from the States who get up at God knows hours to watch Tottenham play feel it, but it was organic for me. How have you, like, I'm not sure what question I have here, but do you understand what I'm getting at?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, it's weird. Like, I didn't grow up playing football. I never cared about football. It was a thing that my buddy Jacob did, and I once went to a game like that he was playing in, and I was like, this is stupid. Like, I'm not, it is not in me. It was never in me, and I would be lying if I said that it was. And there was a kind of a confluence of events. There was a World Cup. I was kind of out of work over that summer, and the games were sort of being played like early afternoon, and I had a lot of free time in my hands, and I would go to this outdoor bar around the corner from where I lived in Brooklyn and watch games. I truly didn't understand what I was watching. I just knew that it mattered to other people, and I enjoyed being around other people. In general, I enjoy being around other people who care very, very deeply about something, even if I don't care about it. I kind of feed off of that caring. I find it pleasurable. And I just remember, like, there was a bus stop right outside of this outdoor bar, and I'd sit there with a pint by myself, and every time a bus came up, these dudes would lean out the windows and lean out the door, and they'd scream asking what the score was, and everybody in the bar would scream back, and then they would go, the next bus would come, and I just knew there was something to this. I didn't know what it was.
Well, for English football?
No, it didn't even matter, whatever the game was.
Right, you know? Okay, so you're talking about how a sport captures someone.
It's just, yes, and what happened was, I started telling my friends, hey, we should go, this is fun, come with me. And they would come with me, and they were like, this is great, but World Cup international football is bullshit. You gotta watch club football. It's where the real juice is. And I was like, whatever, I don't really care. And around that same time, that fall, I started getting dragged by a buddy to a British fish and chips place down the block from me to watch Champions League football. And I just didn't care about it, but there was this one team that kept popping up, and it was Tottenham was that run in 2010 with Redknapp and you know, when Bale's really emerging as the Bale that we fell in love with. And I watched whatever Champions League game I could get my hands on, because the game started to become intoxicating. I started to understand the game. It started to reveal itself to me. I started to see the beauty in it. And this one team kept standing out. And then at a certain point, this friend of mine, Adam, he says, you know, by the way, the bar next door on Saturday and Sunday, that's a Spurs bar. We should go to that. 7:30 in the morning, we'll drink a beer, we'll watch Tottenham play. And I thought, you got to be fucking kidding me. But he dragged me. And the first time I walked in, the first time I saw just 100 people standing in this room, staring up at terrible televisions. They were these old TVs that were bolted to the ceiling, right? They're not like fancy TVs by any stretch of the imagination. This was a bad way to watch sport, but they were all together, and like, but you had to crane your neck to drink your beer and not miss a pass, and all of that, like, just seeing them in there, hearing the roar after a goal was scored, hearing the songs, the singing, just the intensity of it. I have no idea even who was playing that first game, but I fell in love, and it very much felt like this team had chosen me. It was over. Like, whatever illusions I had that I would be, oh, maybe I'll like one team from every league, and oh, I don't care about having my team, I just like watching the sport. Like, it was gone. It was instantaneously like I stopped giving a shit about football as a sport completely and only cared about Tottenham. And
it's so strange. Aaron. It's strange because it's weird that most fans of their clubs aren't really fans of the sport. Like, in England, it's not something we talk about, like saying we love football. Like, you know, football was born out of this country. You know, the first game was played, as you said in the podcast that we were a part of, first time, long time, it was formed out of a very barbaric game between villages where you had to grab the ball from your... I actually think it was a churchyard.
Yeah.
And there were gates. There were gates between the two villages, and you had to get the ball through the gates of the other villages to score a goal. And it might take days for that to happen. But I don't think there are very many, unless you're like for people listening to this will know that the Fighting Cock exists and the Extra Inch exists. And the Extra Inch in Windy, Nathan and Bardi, they love the sport. They love the sport. But I think the vast majority of people don't love the sport. They love their clubs. And it probably creates a situation where you're not understanding the game in the way that you should, given the opinions you have. But for someone across the ocean that separates us to understand that perhaps it's just a little bit more primal or carnal than that is interesting, really, really interesting to hear.
Yeah, I mean, there was like 2 months, right, where I was like, okay, I'm gonna like Tottenham, I'm also gonna like AC Milan, I'm also gonna like I had these like grand illusions, like each league I'll have my team and I'll watch all, and it was obliterated, man. Like, I couldn't to this day, I only now watch like a different game if it has some kind of implication as to like our season. I don't care about it. I only care about seeing what's happening to what feels like my club. And I have to say very, very clearly, like, I feel very much like I'm wearing like my dad's suit or something by saying like my team, talking to you. Like, it doesn't make it, I don't feel comfortable saying it, but I drive my wife crazy because I'm like, we did this or my team did this. And she's like, it's not your fucking team. You're from, you know, suburban New York City. Like, it's, you don't get to claim a team from London, but I feel it.
Yeah, but how do you take that when she says that? Because what she's saying, from someone who's very local to you and understands the way the social dynamic works in sport, but also socially in whatever state you live in, knowing that from over here there are people, many, many people who think also that you shouldn't claim a football club. How do you internalize it? How do you deal with it, Aaron?
So with my wife, I know she loves me. I know, and she's teasing me, and it's fine, right? And outside, like, I mean, like, I don't know what to say other than I have nothing but deep respect for the people that go to the games every day, the people that create the atmosphere, or that used to when we could, right? The people that create the atmosphere, the people that drive the distances, all of that. And I know that where I stand is in relation to them, outside of them, but a part of them. I'm okay with that, right? Like there is a gulf, and it's important to acknowledge the gulf. And sometimes that gulf is narrower, and sometimes it's not. And that's okay. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but that's sort of, I've come to terms. Like at the beginning, I was like, I'm just as much a fan as you are, but like, I'm not. I know that I'm not. I care as much as you might care. It affects me as much as it might affect you. And I participate in the way that I can, but largely like I participate by standing in relation to the people that go every day that sacrifice massive parts of their life to support their club.
I'm not putting a wedge between me and you as two people, you know, who love Tottenham. I'm just saying that there are elements of the English support who are probably like they're entrenched in their idea of what it means to follow a football club, and given what's happened to football, and we have to be thankful on many, many levels of the fact that Tottenham Hotspur can afford to pay Harry Kane's wages and afford to pay Gareth Bale's wages. And it isn't because fans are going to games. It's not. It's because people all across the world have found themselves really, really like fascinated or passionate about the game in the UK. And I don't think any fan can truly be able to stand up and go crazy when Gareth Bale inevitably scores a hat-trick against West Ham on the weekend.
Fuck.
I know, fucking hell. After that. I know, but they have to realise the fact that what is giving them happiness is also the people around the world who are watching the game in the same way. So there is no wedge between me and you, Aaron, at all.
Right, it is important to acknowledge that, like, look, I appreciate that, and I also will acknowledge that my affection for the team, the fact that the fans in the States... Like, we are, you know, progress is a double-edged sword, right? The fact that there's a new stadium is paid for in part by the TV deals that are international, right? But that is also...
Without a doubt.
But that is also... We have to be careful because that is destroying... We started this conversation there, right? It's that is destroying a part of the legacy, part of the things that... It's never mind the wedge. It's the stuff that I fell in love with is also going to go away. When I go back to London and see a game at the new stadium, I know it will be a fundamentally different experience than the experience I had a couple of years ago. And that is because of me. That will pay for the wages, right? It will pay for the wages for Gareth Bale, for all of the transfer business, but it also, there is a double-edged sword, right? And it's important to acknowledge it.
Yeah, it is. Aaron, before we acknowledge all of that stuff, we don't even have to acknowledge it. It's just the way of the world. It's the way, and you know, if you're upset that there are American fans or Indian fans or, I don't know, fans from Australia, whatever. If you're upset about that, it isn't because those fans don't give a shit about our football club. It isn't because of that. It's because of the way Sky Sports has globalised the sport. And it's not the end of the world. You know, it's fine. It's fine. Just it's not. If anything, it's going to help us. You know, we can pay Gareth Bale's wages. We can pay Harry Kane's wages. We can have a forward line like on which we've ever seen before. In part because people across the globe have bought into our football club, and it's a wonderful thing.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
I've lost my point. I got so caught up in my point. I've lost it. So I think what I was getting at was that there is a football club there that we can share across the globe and the game has changed significantly because of it. But do you feel like you're a part of our fan base? Do you feel like that me when I say us and we, that I'm talking about you as a part of that?
So I tell a story a lot, and actually I didn't bring it up in the podcast that you were on, but I did talk about it in a previous episode of my podcast. But there was this one game that I think sort of cemented my feeling of being part of the fan base, and it was a couple of maybe a year into supporting the club. There was that North London derby that we lost 5-2, and Adebayor scored a penalty in the first half, and I think Saha scored as well. And then we went into the half. They equalized. They leveled it up at the half. And I was at this pub in Brooklyn, watching with fans at that. And that sense of, like, you know, the first two goals, that like intense elation, the sense of like, oh my God, we're the, you know, I've never felt as big and as powerful and as happy and connected as that. And then one goal goes in, and then another goal goes in, and we at the half it's level, and went outside for a cigarette break. And in Brooklyn, the New York Spurs used to go to this pub called Floyd, and right next door to it was an Arsenal pub. And there was like 100 of us outside, just sort of like sucker punched in the morning. And there was like two fucking dudes in Arsenal kits that stepped outside. And it was just so indicative, first of all, of this, like, the difference of the fan base. They had two people that sort of half-heartedly were like, oh, scoreboard, 2-2, or whatever. And they just got death stares from all of us, and then they sort of scurried back inside. But all of us stood out there, and then we went back inside for the second half, and they scored three more. And the stunned kind of silence and it's a horror show, right? It's just from the highest to the absolute lowest in the course of 90 minutes. And yeah. This Mari, this woman that I interviewed for the most recent episode, she said it's very rare to meet people when you're at your happiest or they're at their happiest or they're at their lowest and you absolutely agree with them. And that feeling of like everybody in that room was with me, right? We were all in the same. We had been the highest. We suddenly were the lowest together. And in the midst of the absolute lowest, this one lone voice starts singing Tottenham Till I Die, and everyone starts singing, and the game ends, and no one leaves the pub. Everyone's just singing Tottenham Till I Die over and over again, and there's arms around each other, and we're just standing there in solidarity, in unity against this horrible defeat that is meaningless, right? Like, obviously it's meaningless, like, but it's there's nothing but meaning. It's the most important thing in the world in that moment. You look around the world today, it's like, can you believe that, like, I thought that mattered? But like, it mattered so much. But there we were, arms around each other, singing Tottenham Till I Die, and just that sense of these are my people, I am theirs, they are mine, like we are together, and we will in 5-10 minutes go our own ways. We'll walk back to our apartments, we'll walk back to our houses or whatever, or to our lives, our loved ones. But the notion, the sense, the knowledge that we were there together for this, and that we eased each other's pain, and we celebrated together, and we mourned together, and we sung through the whole thing together. The fact that experience, I knew then that I was connected to the fan base, to this club, in a way that I had never, ever, ever felt before in anything, right? And that just continued on. It has never. I keep waiting for it to go away. I keep waiting for the feeling to get quieter. I thought when Poch left, I thought it would get quieter. I thought, like, through the Sherwood era, like, I thought it would get quieter. It just never did. I my relationship to the club has altered in those moments, but but then always snaps back. And now, like, I've heard you talk about it on the Fighting Cock, but, like, you know, when Mourinho came in, I was like, oh, this is, I'm never gonna, I don't know how to relate to this dude. And now I'm like, I get a fucking Mourinho tattoo. Like, I love this man. I absolutely hated him, but I love him now because he's ours and because he belongs to us and we belong to him. And now every word he says, I'm like, oh, he gets it. He gets me. I get him. It's a crazy feeling.
The irony is that he probably doesn't get us.
No,
he probably doesn't. But we have to enjoy him.
Yeah.
As it happens. There was a lady on your podcast who seemed reticent to understand what ultras culture is, and that's not what as you say in your podcast, it's not what English football culture is about. But what was her reticence? What I didn't get from your podcast is why she was so reserved about or resistant to the idea that a bunch of men can watch a football game and enjoy it and behave in a way that's outside of social responsibility or social acceptability. What was her position?
Yeah, I mean, so Julia is really interesting. So Julia is the producer on the podcast and kind of a character in every episode. She's constantly challenging me to think about something in a different way, or I kind of use her as a foil to try to figure out an aspect of a game that I didn't understand or haven't quite figured out what it was saying. And her basic feeling was that from the outside it looks scary, right? And like a Limsy celebration, a bunch of men screaming and jumping up and down and shoving each other and throwing their pints in the air, all of that, it just looks scary. And that if you were to take it out of the context of sport, if you just saw that on the street, some of us might be drawn to it. Some of us might want to walk around it and give a little bit of a buffer, because it looked dangerous. It looked like it could devolve into violence. But
yep.
her big resistance wasn't in the end, and I never found a way to talk about it in the episode. But it was really interesting. In one of our conversations, she and I talked a lot about. It really came down to the fact that she just could not understand the singing part. She doesn't love to sing, but she loves this idea of being together, and she loves this idea of communing and sort of allowing your most authentic self to come out. In the end, when we talked, she and I off air, she said something like, anything, literally anything that gets the most authentic, your most authentic self to emerge and to connect with other people is a good thing. It's just that singing and jumping up and down and pushing and shoving and hugging, that part she couldn't quite get into.
I've had a similar experience when I look at a mosh pit, right? I'm nearly 40 years old. I don't want to be involved in a mosh pit in music. I might appreciate a band and the energy they put out, I don't want to be in the middle of the reactions to their energy. I don't want to be in that. And I understand where she's coming from for that perspective. But for football, it's not that. It really isn't. And when Spurs score a goal against Arsenal and it means something and you lose yourself, you're not worried about being hurt. You're not worried about falling over or someone punching you or someone screaming in your ear, because it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. What you're experiencing in that moment is an unbridled communal sense of complete euphoria that you cannot find anywhere else on this planet. And go ahead, mate.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. And actually, I think she does too. In the end, when I talk, I said to her, if you were to go and sit in, I mean, you know, the Park Lane back then, or you know, today in the stadium, if you were to sit there and just and be there the entire game and experience it in person, you would have no choice but to be.
She would lose herself.
She would lose herself. It's impossible. It's impossible not to.
And how can you deny, or how can you think anything negative about a situation where you lose yourself from reality just for a moment and really appreciate what you're seeing? And like we said on the pod, it's not about what you put in your body. It's not about drugs. It's not about a preconceived idea about what is good. It's just in that moment you lose yourself. And I can't replace. It's a shame. It's a shame. When I was listening to the podcast, I felt a little bit like it's a shame that she doesn't get to experience what we do.
Yeah, and it's also like, right, it's such a shame that none of us get it right now. It's such a loss. It's such a loss.
Yeah, it's fucked.
It's fucked. But I will say that, you know, the little things that you do, the podcasts, the ways in which people are able to connect even just to the feeling of it, I don't think it's gone. You know, Alan Fisher, who's a great writer.
He's wonderful.
He's wonderful and an amazing human being. And he said that he was afraid that that his memories of it were dying, and that they were all that, like, not only was this cruel, the cruelty of this moment was not just that he couldn't go to the games, but that his memory of going to the games was being lost. I believe that that's impossible. I think that, like, we are still just, it's the connection has changed for all of us for now, but it will come back. And I think that's hopefully the point also of this episode, an empty cathedral is that once we come back, once the world does open up again, and once we do get back into the stadiums and sport and connectivity returns, I don't think it will be that hard for us to find our way back. In the meanwhile, it's a horror. It's a nightmare. But I don't think it will all be gone from us. I hope. I really hope.
I think it's reflective of a wider society. We all want to get back to where we were before. We want to go to the pub and drink beers and embrace each other, and we want to do that at football as well, and we can't have one without the other. So either we get past it or things will change, and I hope we get past it. I really do. Aaron, thank you so much for give us your time and inviting me on your podcast. It was really, really good and gave me the opportunity to reflect on what it means to be Tottenham.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. A camel Tottenham.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners' or renters' coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.